Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the In Focus podcast. And today is episode 2, where we will be speaking on Pixar Animation Studios. Very prominently, it's the 30th anniversary since Toy Story's release, and nearly 39 years since the initial Pixar short movie came out. So yeah, celebrating a long history of Pixar Animation Studios. Today we've got the charismatic gentleman Alex and Sean joining us as always to talk through everything Pixar, our early memories of the studios, the films that shaped our childhood, how they've developed and I guess evolved over time really to the point where that now Disney's takeover of the studios and what's to come in the future. So yeah, let's get into it, gents. What do you want to kick off first? First memories, early understandings of Pixar when they first came into...
Start with the short they did before Toy Story, because I'm not really aware of it. I don't really know much about it. You guys got any memories of it, what it was?
Well, they did quite a few, really. I don't remember the early ones. The first time I remember coming onto the shorts actually was when Toy Story released, and I'm pretty sure they did a VHS of the shorts that they'd already made at that point. And the ones that really stick out and the ones that I remember are there's two of them. So there was Nick Knack, which was a snowman stuck in a snow globe trying to escape. And then there was Jerry's Game, which is an old dude playing chess against himself, evidently, as it turned out. They're the ones that really stuck out to me. I think Nick Knack was
89. I think it was before Toy Story, wasn't it?
Yeah, 1989. Very, very early, obviously, in the studios.
And when you say short, are we literally talking like, I don't know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes kind of thing?
Yes, yeah. I think Nick Knack was probably maybe that, 3-4 minutes. Along lines. I think Jerry's Game might be a little bit longer because it was after Toy Story. Mm. So the technology and such had improved by then. And you can see that, you know, there's a massive jump when you watch Nick Knack and you see just the animation, the visuals, the characters that they were able to use. I mean, it was very basic. There was nothing going on in the background. There was no real background there to interact with. It was just everything was in the forefront. And the characters were very, very limited.
But it really is.
It was very fun.
Just testing it, I guess, isn't it? Trying it bit by bit. And...
Yeah. It was a bit. It was a bit sexual as well.
Was it? Knack.
Yeah. Because it was literally this snowman. Yeah. The snowman stuck in the snow globe, and then he sees this sexy Hawaiian girl or a mermaid or something in another snow globe, and it's just him basically for like 3 minutes trying to break out any way he can to get into this other snow globe with this big titted
ravish Nitna.
Yeah, basically.
But again, sign of the times, isn't it?
Quite a racy title when you think of it.
Nitna. Yeah.
I think Jerry's Game was the short before A Bug's Life.
Yeah. So it came out after Toy Story, but before.
I don't know about the cinema.
Yeah, it came out in 97, Jerry's Game, and then A Bug's Life was 98.
Sounds about right.
And then the same, I don't know if you, do you remember the short?
I remember some of them. I can't remember the name of it, but I think it was the first one where they first pioneered the sort of CGI technology to make shapes bend and move to create speed. It was a character, can't remember its name, being chased by a bee, but the bee sort of like was obviously chased it went like that. So that was like its first sort of flex of the technology, really. I think it was only a minute long. Could have been Pixar's first real showcase of the technology that they could create. I think it was under John Lasseter, who went on to do
He did
a couple more as well. That was obviously early days Pixar.
I mean, they're probably just showing that to like business partners for funding and to
what we
progress to the next level and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Steve Jobs was heavily involved back in the day, wasn't he? Am I right that I think he's responsible for selling it to Disney? Was he? Or getting Disney on board?
Quite possibly.
Yeah. that was very unprofessional.
But it was quite, I guess it was, obviously the technology was revolutionary, but it must have been like quite difficult to sell it to the big studios. I mean, obviously like the first shot that they did was in 86, and it took till 95 to obviously get Toy Story out. A couple of years would have been, developing and actually creating the film. But yeah, it must have been a big gamble, I guess, for studios and production companies to actually trust that a fully animated film could actually take off and do well. And I think obviously Pixar, they shaped it. I think DreamWorks Studios came out similar sort of time or just after Pixar.
Yeah.
In terms of feature length, obviously Shrek came out in, was it 99, 2000? And they may have had a couple of more films before that. Yeah.
You always kind of get like this thing where you have like two like different rival companies, so to speak, and it's like a bit of a space racer, if you will.
It's definitely needed.
DreamWorks.
That came out around about the same time as A Bug's Life, didn't it? I don't know if it was 97 or 98. And again, I think it's a funny sort of theme that you see in Hollywood, like two similar films being released by two different production companies. Even in the animation world, it happens with Bug's Life and Ants. So,
it's very interesting. I think it's healthy to do because obviously you kind of push each other in a way, don't they? Any great sport, I guess. I guess let's start with like Toy Story. What are like
first memories?
Yeah, your first like personal memories of it. I'm trying to think like what 95. I'd have been seven. Yeah, I'd have been seven. Yeah, I can do it.
Six. Yeah, I would have been six.
Again, very very vague memories of just like the like pure basics of oh wow, some guys flying around and there's a cowboy. I mean, the fact that I have I only have a few very vivid memories of it, but the fact that I have them from such an early age does show like it was like obviously never seen anything like that before, you know, and it was totally different to cartoons. Obviously straight away fell in love with Woody and Buzz.
Yeah, it was the first fully CG film, wasn't it?
I think, over
a feature length.
And you know what, it's just, take all that aside and, you know, like not a gimmick, but, you know, the fact that it's animated and stuff, at its core, it's a damn good film. And you can tell the script, the characters, everything is just like, it's a worldy of a film. And, you know, rightly so, you could argue it's one of the best like CGI films ever made. And to me, it definitely is anyway. It was so impactful and revolutionary. But at the same time, it was a great film. And I suppose all those legendary films have that, don't they?
Yeah. It's like, wasn't riding the gimmick of the technology. The technology was there to tell the story.
Yeah, which is
the most important thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not like, we could do this and we could do that. It's right. Okay, we make animated films. We want to tell the story. We've got these themes we want to convey in it, blah, blah, blah. And it's just...
That's what Pixar always was, wasn't it? They were just great storytellers. The fact that they did it with animation films, a bonus for us, obviously, growing up in our generation, and as adults, you know, you're still... appreciate it. And I think the good thing that Pixar are able to do and other animation studios is they're able to blend between sort of a target audience of like children, you know, young kids and adults. You know, you come away from it, you know, whether you're a kid and you pick up certain things and you understand it from, you know, that perspective, and then when you grow up you watch it again and you pick up like completely different lens. Like the emotion and the story, you know, you've got the camaraderie between Buzz and Woody and their love for Andy. So you definitely appreciate it as an adult and as a kid. And they've just managed to do that throughout pretty much every film I think they've ever released, really. They've always carried those great stories.
Yeah.
And that emotion.
That's their core, isn't it? I mean, like, for me personally, I definitely don't look at them as kids' films. To me, they're like family films, and in like the sense that family, they are for every member of that family. There's a lot for everyone to take from that, and you know, families connect over it, and you know, probably share some, you know, everyone shares really tender moments with each other watching Pixar films. I cry at pretty much every one of them. Yeah.
You're supposed to be like, oh.
Another thing about Toy Story, I think the cultural impact of it.
I was just going to say, I thought you were going to say Bo Peep's fit.
You would, right?
That's kind of like unspoken. So go on, cultural impact. Toy Story poem.
The cultural impact of Toy Story, and therefore Pixar, seeing as it was their sort of maiden feature, really, seeing as it was not just designed for kids, obviously it was for adults as well, but the I think we'll all remember the toy line and the craze and the buzz about trying to get a Buzz Lightyear and a Woody toy. It was literally life replicating art, because that was the number one toy, wasn't it? The Buzz Lightyear. And
did you have one?
I got one eventually.
But I was
dying to get one.
I don't remember having them initially. So I don't know if that says something about my parents. I think I was just, I don't know, I was watching it on repeat, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, I have Woody today. He's in the bed bedroom. With his little cowboy.
I have Woody every morning.
enjoying his quesadillas. I guess that's kind of wasted on the audience. That's a very in joke. Sean basically didn't know what quesadillas were today. So.
No.
Every day's a different day.
I'm only 35.
Enjoying it while it lasts.
I think it was pretty spectacular as well to think of the cast that they managed to get together for Toy Story as well. I mean, think of obviously Tom Hanks and
Tim Allen,
yeah. Both in the pomp, really, in the mid-90s as well. To get them on board was massive.
Mean, they got the Santa Claus.
Yeah.
The actual Santa Claus.
Yeah.
And Forrest Gump.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was a gamble, wasn't it? It was a completely new concept. So, it really was something getting them.
Could you argue that Toy Story is Tom Hanks' biggest film, or at least his most iconic?
You could argue.
Probably not. I don't think it's his most iconic. No. I don't know if it's his biggest, from a revenue perspective.
I don't know, you know.
You think of obviously Forrest Gump and Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, I know there's a lot, isn't there?
Yeah, he's been.
Have you guys seen the clip where Tom Hanks walks into an elevator and there's a woman and her kid there? And she's like, look, it's Woody. And the kid's like, no, he's not. And then he just literally breaks into Woody's character. And the kid's just like, it's in Pixar fashion, it's quite heartwarming to watch, actually. Come on, we're talking family stuff here. Keep the smut out of it. Talking to myself here, by the way. Okay, yeah, so I guess it all started with Toy Story. And, am I right thinking Bug's Life was next?
Yes.
Yeah, it was the next one.
I've never watched it since I was a kid, you know.
Oh, it's worth a watch.
It's great. Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean,
the story structure is Seven Samurai and Magnificent Seven. So it's a tried and tested sort of story structure. Yeah, definitely. And it worked great.
You listen to me, my boy. I've made a living out of being a failure, and you, sir, are not a failure.
Oh, but Flick, you've done so many good...
I mean, obviously, that was in cahoots and at war with Ants at a similar time.
Is that Sly Stallone's Ants?
Yes, Sly Stallone.
Yes.
What studio did Ants? Was it?
I think it was
DreamWorks.
Okay.
I think it was.
But I always preferred
Bug's Life.
Yeah.
I always remember liking it. I've definitely seen Ants more. The fact that you just, again, that shows the difference between them is I feel like Ants kids at the time probably loved it, but obviously you got Bug's Life with that whole, the Seven Samurai inspiration and stuff That was totally lost on me watching that as a kid, obviously. So, I'm quite intrigued to pick that up again and, just go, watch it through
And then obviously Pixar went on to do the likes of Finding Nemo, which I think at the time was one of the biggest top 10 films ever made in terms of revenue.
What I was saying about A Bug's Life is I'm intrigued to watch it again because of the whole Seven Samurai angle and, it's classically inspired narrative, I guess. Yeah, again, completely lost on me. Lost on me as a kid in that regard. And again, I have definitely only seen it a handful of times. I think I want to say my initial feeling from it was it's like, this isn't Toy Story kind of thing. And it was, I don't know, I feel like it might have been a bit slower paced. I don't know why I keep looking at you. You're the animation guru.
Well, yeah. And then obviously next up, I could be wrong. No, it wasn't Finding Nemo next. It was Toy Story 2 next.
Was it?
Yeah.
It was Toy Story 2 next one, which is obviously Pixar's first sequel. But then I think
Monsters Inc.
Monsters Inc. Was it?
Yeah.
Monsters
Inc. 2001.
Yeah. Which I think a lot of people might think it's the favorite Pixar. I think that it's your favorite, Walshy.
Yeah, I think it is. To be fair, I think it's. I mean, yeah, you're trying to pick your best film out of
a very good,
a really exceptional list of great films. But yeah, I think Monsters Inc. for me is probably my personal favorite. I mean, I love
Yeah.
I think like the new ones I really like, you know, don't get me wrong, they're still brilliant films. But for me, I think the first, I don't know, 15 years probably of Pixar releasing films, like feature length films, was probably the best period for me in terms of, you know, what they put out and, you know, the films and the stories and such. And yeah, Monsters Inc. is obviously kind of the top, you know, early on in that. But yeah, I think it's my personal favourite Pixar.
Do you think that's because they come out as a very impressionable age, I guess? You know, like from being a kid to like teenager. And again, I guess it was like a bit of a clean slate for them, really, because nobody obviously had DreamWorks and, you know.
Yeah, that's it. There was no, I guess there was no like larger expectations and, you know, they wasn't really competing with much outside of DreamWorks. And, you know, when you're in an industry where there's, you know, a multitude of different production companies and different films being put out, so they're all competing against each other. But yeah, in the animation world, it wasn't a really DreamWorks and Pixar, so it was hard for them to put a foot wrong, but, you know, they were still consistent in the films, and, you know, they're all original stories as well, which, you know, is incredible. You know, it's hard to come by. Obviously, you know, most films are inspired by, you know, other stories and other films, but by and large, they're all original stories, original characters, and they were great. I think, yeah, just that first sort of 15-year period for me was just probably their best films that they've produced. They've had great films since then, don't get me wrong.
I do think as well.
That's like 15 years.
The as well as you saying, obviously they hit us at the right age, like anything, for it to be impressionable. But I also feel like the stories, the early stories, like you're saying, obviously the first 15 years, not only did they not have much competition in animation, in that style of animation anyway, but the, for instance, we've mentioned A Bug's Life uses story tropes that are tried and tested. I do think the stories are timeless. Like, for instance, Monsters, Inc. Obviously, that's, you're going over 20 years old. So, but with my children, obviously, one's 10, one's 3, they instantly click to the likes of Toy Story, Monsters, Inc., the earlier stuff more so than the later stuff. So I think they had, obviously, a honeymoon bit, like lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
They had, for a while, Pixar. Not that they've gone bad by any means, but obviously,
I mean, you kind of know what to expect from them a little bit now, don't you? And rightly so, because
formula
works. And obviously, I guess of say, I don't know, around, between 7 and 10 or a bit older, this day and age, you know, the latest releases will be their favorite Pixar films, 100%. You know, again, because we talk about like hitting them at the right time, that impressionable age. So they're just going to go from generation to generation. Again, it comes back to, it's just the core quality of the storytelling and the themes, the timeless. You know, let's go into it and break down. Okay, what would you deem as like the most common themes that crop up in Pixar films? Like for me, obviously, I think coming of age is a huge one.
Yeah.
And I feel like themes of like parenthood and how you deal with loss and, you know, it's all...
Essentially, it is,
isn't it? And, but again, in a way, it's really good skills to teach kids.
No, definitely.
You know, kind of, you know, and there's a lot of like existential questions thrown in there as well.
Yeah, it's not all laid out.
No.
I mean, there's stuff to think about.
Yeah. I mean, okay, for example, taking it back to Toy Story, you know, I definitely, as a kid, cried watching that film, you know, in the right moments. And then, lo and behold, when Toy Story 3 eventually came out, I'd imagine I'd have been in my 20s. And I was bawling like, you know, I was 10 again. You know, that film absolutely crushed me. And again,
that's the power of storytelling.
I imagine Dave will probably feel similar, but I'm going to bring up like parenthood and like daddy issues to a point, you know, where Andy gives them away and all that. It's like, it's just about it. And it's just, you know, so
it's real, isn't it?
I think that's
what you take away from them, like the real emotions. And even though they're animations, a lot of it is sort of real world examples and things that happen to people in their life. And it gives you a platform to be able to, I guess, see and understand that, you know, these things happen, whether it's happening in your own life or your friends, family's life. You know, these things happen, and I think it's about being real and being comfortable and talking and sharing about those experiences. And I think that's what Pixar do really well with that, with the emotional side of things. When they are creating these stories and these films, they're very real and raw about, you know, real life, real world things that happen to us. And it's a good thing, you know, it enables you to ask questions, you know, whether it's you as a child asking questions to your parents or your children asking questions to you. It's a really good vehicle into opening up.
Yeah,
because it's difficult. I mean, I don't know. You know, you guys know, you know, for me when I was younger, you know, I didn't really open up. I didn't really talk about a lot of things. just because of the environment that it was in. But these films, I guess, they give you that outlet. Even if you wasn't speaking to somebody about it, you were able to see that, you know, these things happen and they're normal. So it was a real good outlet for your own emotions as well.
Yeah, it was those serious issues on a very accessible level for all ages, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think animation can do that. But obviously just looking at the bare bones of it, it's animation. It's easy to watch for all ages. And then obviously it can tackle, like you were just mentioning, deep issues that we can all relate.
Now Woody, he's been my pal for as long as I can remember. He's brave, like a cowboy should be, and kind and smart. But the thing that makes Woody special is he'll never give up on you. Ever. He'll be there for you, no matter what.
I suppose that's Pixar's core strength, isn't it? It's not just relating to kids, it's, you know, all ages, essentially.
And to kind of bundle all and package all that into like a fun, you know, adventure animation film, then, you know, absolutely hats off to them, because it must be a tricky balancing act to do, and they do it so well. I think for me, they do it better than anyone, you know, in that kind of.
They lead the industry, yeah, definitely.
Would you guys say, again, I was thinking about this before we recorded, would you kind of class Pixar as like the Ghibli of the West?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
I'd say so.
Yeah, I don't think there's anybody up there. I mean, DreamWorks do really good.
They do, yeah.
But there's a standard of Pixar, and if I think it's more newsworthy if Pixar has a flop, a dud, because it's so unusual. They usually get the tone right.
The only dud I can think of recent time for them would be Lightyear.
Okay, obviously, it's up to your own opinion. Yeah, I mean, certainly. Critically and financially, that definitely does stand out. I mean,
it's always going to be difficult, wasn't it? Especially when they're adapting an existing character in that world.
Yeah,
that's changing.
Loved.
Yeah, changing him quite
a bit
drastically, I guess, in terms of the look, you know, of Buzz. It wasn't the Buzz that we grew up watching, right? It was kind of a more real life representative of what he was, what he should have been, I guess.
It was
not the toy version
of
him,
wasn't it?
Yeah. I found it intriguing, I won't lie. You know, the premise of it, like, obviously, that makes sense that Buzz Lightyear, the toy.
There's a real version of the toy.
So I thought, oh, this could be interesting, this. And then part of me was kind of thinking, oh, Christ, where could you go with this? You could, you know, you could do like all the toys and what, you know, where they originated from and stuff. But yeah, it didn't have the right balance. And I kind of feel like the supporting cast, so to speak, weren't as memorable, as lovable as the other characters in Toy Story. Because when you think of Toy Story, the amount of characters that are in it, you know, and you love pretty much all of them, including Sid. But, you know there's a hell of a lot of characters in those films, and they're just universally loved by everyone. And that in itself is just, that takes a lot of skill. And yeah, for me, for Lightyear, I just, to be brutally honest, I didn't give a shit about any of the other characters in it, really. So,
yeah, I think that was probably our... I don't know when Disney bought Pixar out, but I guess that was our first real taste of
100%.
Disney getting involved with their creativity.
That
for me, that's kind of like what it felt like to me. It was very much they're not, I guess, responsible or in control of what they're putting out anymore.
Yeah.
And I think I'm pretty sure I saw it recently that there's Pixar Studios themselves are not going to be putting anything out anymore of themselves in terms of original stories. It's all going to be like Disney led.
Oh, right.
I think I saw that somewhere. You'll have to fact check me on that. But yeah. I think I've read it somewhere, which is a shame.
I was going to say that's a little bit disappointing to hear, really, if that's the case.
Yeah.
But again, it is what it is. Disney got the money to buy what they bought, what they want, and made deals with what they want. But everything's just it's just pre-existing stuff, isn't it? It's like, let's see how we can.
Yeah, you can
try it well out.
You can definitely tell, like, Disney's really, really cracking the whip with Pixar. It's sequels at the minute, isn't it? It's more sequels than originals for Disney and Pixar. I mean, I think the future Pixar films, we've got Elio coming out this year, which I'm really looking forward to because it's so original. Rare for there to be an original story.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we just had Inside Out 2.
Inside Out 2, yeah.
Yeah.
Which I've still not watched.
I don't know about you, Sean, like, but... Like Inside Out for me, I think Inside Out is a brilliant film. Mm-hmm. But again, for me, the second one, it didn't have the same feel as the first one. Like, even though they were like the same characters and then some new additions, some new emotions, you didn't feel as attached to them.
Yeah, it just wasn't there. Concept had worn itself out. They'd done everything they could do in the first. Not that it was a bad film by any means, but it was
definitely not the same.
Memorable like the first one was, which like you said, was a brilliant film. But I came away from Inside Out 2 going, right, I've watched it, move on.
It was all right.
You never said to go back.
No. I wouldn't be bothered. Yeah. Which I feel like Pixar are better than that.
Yes.
Or at least they have been in the past. So sequels, I don't think, are the right way forwards for Pixar. Well, I mean, obviously, it's so easy to do. I mean, it's not to say that they've had bad. I mean, we were talking about Toy Story 3.
Yeah.
Toy Story 4 was good. Toy Story 5 is due, which I don't.
What do you think of? I'll
obviously be.
Oh, we'll watch.
Yeah, of course you will. Yeah.
But that's the point, isn't it? That's why they're making it. You'll watch it.
Yeah.
I felt this way about number four though, and I kind of thought, is this like the first cash in on it, so to speak? In all fairness, Toy Story 4 was very, very good. I've watched it a few times and really enjoyed it. Again, I don't know whether it's just because we're so connected to those characters, but there was a lot in it. And no, to be fair, there's a good few additions, like Keanu Reeves, Duke Kaboom, was it? I have to say, just again, on a personal note, my favourite thing about like Toy Story, and I think I want to say the director of number three, is it Lee Unkrich or something like that? He's obsessed with The Shining, and there's just loads of Easter eggs from The Shining, like the carpets in there. Some of the music's in, I think, Toy Story 4. I think, you know, when they break into like the, is it like a charity shop, secondhand shop, where it's all stuff that there's like an old gramophone, and I think it starts playing, and it's like the music from the gold room in The Shining. And I'm just sat there in the cinema, and I'm like, yeah. just little stuff like that, and again, that shows like me as an adult taking more from those films. Like, I imagine if I go back and watch, especially Toy Story 3, and I've not seen it in quite some time, but there'll be a lot of stuff in there that just went over my head, and I'm sure it's the same with all the earlier ones. But yeah,
they do like a good Easter egg, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
So the two memorable ones for me that I remember are the Pizza Planet truck.
Yeah,
from Toy Story.
That,
apparently, I've never took the time to actually look, but apparently that appears in every Pixar movie. Like literally every Pixar movie.
Surprised.
I'm trying to think at like what point in the Pixar, like you think of like Monsters, Inc. Like where the hell was it in Monsters, Inc.? Where was it in Cars? Where was it in Ratatouille? Where was it? But apparently it is in every one of them.
I feel like Cars goes under the radar a little bit. I genuinely really
Cars was
like
great.
This one. I don't think I actually don't think I've seen the sequels, but yeah, I love the first one.
How many is there? Three of them.
Three,
yeah. Third one was good, but I really didn't like the second. Because Cars 2, for me, is the worst Pixar film. I've watched it once,
and that was it.
And it was hard.
Again, I wonder if it's a thing, if they have like the difficult second film, because for me, I mean, I don't think there's a bad Toy Story film, but my least favourite or least watched is definitely the second one.
Yeah.
I do like it, but yeah, I don't know. It's just...
And again, is that taste? Because I know Toy Story 2 is a lot of people's favourite, isn't it? But it's my least favourite as well, to be fair. I don't know what it was.
It felt like
half a film.
Yeah,
I didn't feel complete. I don't know. Having said that, Incredibles 2 was much better really than the first.
I agree. Am I right thinking the third's coming as well?
Yes. Which is the new lineup of sequels.
So it'd be interesting to see how that fares as well. So you got new Toy Story, new Incredibles. I'm sure there's some of the other classics on the way. No doubt. But that's clearly Disney's...
Incredibles, Toy Story.
That's their business model.
Incredibles was great.
It was...
I don't know if it was done purposely. One of the scenes in The Incredibles, you know, with Samuel L. Jackson's character.
Yeah.
And I think he's in. Yeah, yeah. He's in his apartment. And, the big fucking giant cyborg thing, three-legged thing that Mr. Fantastic's fighting, like, crashes into a building next to him and it blows up. And then there's a scene in The Avengers, which is basically mirroring that from Samuel L. Jackson's perspective.
And right.
I don't know if they're actually... Obviously, it's Disney, right? So I don't know if they tied it in purposely, but there's a little Easter egg there as well, which is fun. Do you know the only actor as well to voice a character in every Pixar film?
Yes, it's
Sean
I don't know the actor's name, but is it the one who plays Ham in Toy Story?
Yeah.
Ratzenberger. Yeah, everyone. Is he still alive?
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it was in everyone.
I mean, Toy Story is only, what, 30 years old, so, I mean, we're still alive.
I'm sure
AI will keep that going if needed. But again, to bring that into question, like everything else is just AI. But again, that's going to be huge for Pixar as well. And you know what, how you can push it, I don't know how they'll use that. I'm sure it'll probably make things a lot cheaper for them and a lot more efficient.
Yes. So I guess that's where you don't want them to.
Yeah.
I guess lapse a little bit because it's probably got the potential to speed things up for them, but then you don't want them to lose the quality and what they do.
I feel like as long as, well, depending how much of a grip Disney have on them, as long as the core principles are the characters, the story, amongst anything else, take as much time as you need that. You get that absolutely nailed on. And then, I mean, it might work out good if they stick to those principles. The introduction of AI and stuff, it might just speed up. You know, they come out more often rather than it takes 3 or 4 years to make a Toy Story film. It might be out in 2 years or something like that. Yeah, hopefully it makes it more efficient and it's a benefit to it rather than just churning them out.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I feel like the wait for a Pixar film, I kind of like it because you're not like again. I feel like I always beat on Disney a little bit, but the amount of like superhero films they churn out, you know, if there was Pixar films out like 3 or 4 every year, I'd probably be a bit sick of them.
No, definitely.
I do kind of like that it does take.
There's too much of a good thing.
There is, 100%. So, yeah.
Quality over quantity, 100%. So, what would we say is our favourite Pixar and least favourite?
Okay.
Obviously, You firstly, Monsters Inc.'s your favourite?
Yeah, I think so for me. Characters are great. So you've got John Goodman and Billy Crystal heading it up. That's a really good bromance that they have. You know, they're really good buddies. So, yeah, I guess that sort of it brings you back to, like, your childhood and, you know, obviously you guys as friends. So it gives you that sort of emotional connection, you know, with it being a buddy film. And then Boo gets introduced to into the fray, and you know it's about them sort of trying to look after her when she comes into this crazy world and everybody's out to get her, and you know it's the jeopardy of them trying to, you know, keep her safe. So you know you resonate with that. You know, they're trying to protect this little girl who's as cute as a button. The story is just really, really good.
Clock 118. Do you have 119? Do I see 120? Oh, I don't believe it.
I'm not even breaking a sweat.
Not you. Look, the new commercial's on.
Future is bright. I think even people who didn't like kids, you can all agree that Boo is frigging cute.
So in a way, Walter, are you saying there that film is kind of like if us three stumbled upon a child when we were younger, how we would deal with it?
Yeah, I always envisaged that you two would find me and I'm little baby Boo and you'd protect me.
Love it.
that's what I was waiting for.
It's kept on the go.
Yeah, no, but it's just it's a fantastic film.
It's virtually flawless. It's hard to find flaws in Monsters Inc.
I don't think they exist.
No, I don't.
Really good antagonist in Buscemi playing.
At the time as well, the physics for the animation on Sully's hair was revolutionary for the time.
Cameo of the Abominable Snowman. I think it's just great. There's a lot of good characters. It's just a fantastic film. I think it's just one of them that you can just watch over and over again. You'll never get tired of it. You know, I think it's always going to bring you those sort of feels of, you know, when you're a kid watching it. You know, growing up as an adult, you can appreciate it in different ways.
It's always been, isn't it?
So
least favorite Pixar. That you've seen anyway, or we've been too negative here. I don't know.
No, you can. I think you can say that at least. I think for me, I'd probably say Inside Out too, because the first one is so good. Like it is genuinely so good.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was just a bit let down or disappointed that the second one just didn't feel the same way, even though it's the same returning characters with, you know, the addition of those few new emotions that they brought in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was my biggest letdown.
Yeah.
So I'll probably say that's my least favourite of all of them, even though it's not it's not a bad film.
It's just not.
Well, the original.
That's a testament to Pixar, isn't it? That it's not a bad film.
It's just not a bad film. No. It's just, yeah, it's, not
their standards are so high.
Yeah, exactly. How about you guys?
You crops.
Considering what I've spoken about tonight, I'm going to go in and say my favourite film is Toy Story 3 from Pixar. Again, it's just kind of, characters that I absolutely adore and, you know, just kind of like the situation they're thrown in, you know, and I guess it's like a bit of, there's a coming of age element in there as well, when to see it from like the toys' point of view where it's like, oh, we don't get played with anymore. No. Again, and it's that whole like underlining and the themes of like neglect, I guess.
Yes.
But I did. You know, who thinks of like toys' feelings? You don't, do you?
No.
You know, and like, just the whole thing of like, oh yeah, three toys in a drawer, and then what happens? And I don't know. I found that angle interesting, and then the whole thing with Andy was just like absolutely heartbreaking. It's like, I don't know. Toy Story. Yeah, I think there's some really good additions to it. I love obviously Lotso's great villain in that. And it's in Mr. Prickle Pants with Timothy Dalton. Every time that character's on screen, I can't help but giggle. It's so charming and just silly, and it's great. It's some really great set pieces in it. I thought the animation was, as expected, it's like really on point with them. But yeah, I mean, the fact that I found it a real like emotional roller coaster to the point, like I said before, I was just absolutely crying my eyes out probably about three times by the end of the film. I do feel like it may be slightly too long. I feel like it had a couple of endings in it, but to be fair, the one they settled on was perfect for me. That kind of, it wasn't tainted by number four, but I definitely have my apprehensions because it ended so perfectly. And again, I feel like the kid who they introduced into it was quite charming as well, to kind of echo Monsters, Inc. Is it? I can't think of a name. Anyway, the little girl. And I don't know, there's just something nice of like passing on to the next generation. It was just such a really nice film, and yeah, just filled me with joy and every sort of emotion going in a good way.
Come full circle. And...
I kind of felt like at the time, all right, this is also me letting go of Woody and Buzz and all those toys. But it turned out it wasn't, because they make too much money and they'll forever be coming back.
Yeah.
Breaking children's hearts over and over again.
Least favourite Pixar? Of what you've seen?
Yeah. Again, I feel like it's unfair to say Bug's Life, but I'm basically basing this on that I haven't watched it very much, and I haven't had much desire to. So I don't know. There was something that on a child's level, it didn't click with me, and for some reason I haven't gone back. But I am intrigued to try it again. And I wouldn't be surprised if if you asked me this on podcast in a couple months' time, I'd be like, what the fucking hell was I on?
It's very fun. Like, A Bug's Life is very funny. Like, it is like probably one of the funnier films, I think. Okay. It's quite like outlandish and silly, and like some of the characters are just like hilariously funny. I can't remember the cat. What's the caterpillar's name? The German caterpillar. I'm a beautiful butterfly.
You all look like ants from up here. I can't remember. He's funny.
But it is. It is.
I'm Tuck and Roll.
The little Tuck and Roll in the circus. I think they are wood lice, and then you got the flea, who's like he runs the circus, right? He's hilarious as well. What is it, like a human? Not a human, a human cannonball or whatever. He shoots himself out of a fucking cannonball onto a spider's web. Like, just hilarious. It's hilarious film.
So would you guys say that Bug's Life is kind of like a bit of an underrated gem from Pixar? Because it definitely goes under the radar.
Like, people don't really talk about it. I think, other than probably our generation that grew up watching it, and obviously not you, because you didn't pay much attention to it.
I wasn't done with Woody.
I think it definitely went under the radar. And again, competing at a similar time with Ants.
To be fair to it, A Bug's Life was the follow-up to Toy Story, so to speak, in their release, wasn't it? So it was like, a difficult second album.
It was never going to hit the same, was it?
No. But yeah, I definitely need to go back and visit that. But yeah, I don't particularly have any like really fond memories of it. And the majority of the Pixar films that I've seen, I do. That's why I'm going with A Bug's Life. I will probably be mad at myself once I've watched it. Yeah,
well, maybe you are. You still at home.
What about yourself?
Well, like I said, Cars 2 is definitely my least favorite.
What'd you put that down to?
Well, I think the main character is Mater
Yeah,
he was like the secondary character in the first one. It's like it just didn't work him as a main character because he's sort of there to bounce off Lightning McQueen. He's a bit more serious, and you know you need that dynamic for it to work. So that was flaw number one. And then at the same time, it was taking itself very seriously as a spy film rather than just having what Pixar do of you know, like a heartfelt story at its core. It was a spy film, and there was nothing in it that was Pixar for me. It just fell completely flat. I find it very difficult to watch. I mean, I've watched it once. I watched it in the cinema. Uh-huh. I do need to watch it again because I've not showed it to Henry or Hugo yet. I mean, but I've showed them Cars 1, Cars 3. They love both of them.
I mean, you never really hear anybody talk about it, or it's never in any of the lists online. You know, top 10 Pixar films and all that kind of stuff. So there must be something in that.
It definitely falls flat for me.
Yeah.
My favourite Pixar. Now this changes. Monsters Inc. As Walshy's mentioned, makes Monsters Inc. great. And then there's Ratatouille, which I think Ratatouille is another hidden gem.
Yeah, it's really good.
That no one talks about enough. But I think I remember before it came out. It was like 6 months before it came out. It was advertised to death, and I saw so many adverts for it, and I was like, it killed it for me. I didn't want to see it. I was like, I wasn't interested. I don't know why they hammered it home so much.
Over-marketing.
Yeah, it really was. I was like, oh, no. I mean, and at the time, it was so different from anything Pixar had done. After 2 years, a rat controlling a man to make a friggin' meals, essentially. I was like, oh, this is, like, what's Pixar doing here? And then I watched it, and I just fell in love with it. I do genuinely feel like it's an underrated gem. It's got everything that makes a Pixar film great for me.
I have a theory here as to why it may be your favourite film. I feel like the foodie that is trapped inside of you is watching and thinking, oh, wow, look at all this amazing food. It looks great.
Pasta. Cheese.
Exactly. Maybe
desires inside. Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. Like French cuisine.
Yeah, frog's legs and all that. Yeah.
I try frog
legs.
Before I try.
Yeah, they're nice. You were on about it before, Crops. I think Toy Story 3 made you cry. What Pixar film has made you cry?
Made me cry?
None.
Not that I remember. I definitely got emotional.
Actual tears.
Okay, what's hit your hardest in the fields?
Toy Story 3, obviously, right up there. I'm trying to discern between the child me. Monsters Inc.'s right up there. Oh yes, right at the end of Monsters Inc. where he has to say goodbye to Boo, and then right at the end where he sees her again. That's just like, in fact, that hit me harder as a grown up.
Okay.
Than it did as a kid, because it's like, oh, imagine seeing, like, I know it's not his kid, but the kid you love again. It's just like, oh, God, that hits hard. There's even though it's not one of the best, A Good Dinosaur with the dad dying, pretty hardcore.
You got Up as well at the opening of that.
The opening sequence. That's one of the best opening sequences to a film. Yeah,
I definitely cried at that. How do you feel about that film in general?
It goes off.
That opening is, could you argue that's the best Pixar opening they've done?
Yeah,
it probably is. I think it is. 5-10 minutes of a film.
Yeah. Oh, it's like, I mean,
it's tremendous.
Heart-wrenching. Yeah. I've never seen the first 10 minutes of any film that ripped my heart out like that. Honestly, though,
I don't know why I'm laughing.
No, that was amazing. But yeah, I agree that about halfway through the film with the pack of dogs and stuff and the blimp, it loses itself a little bit.
Mm.
It's still a great film. Yeah, definitely that. Wall-E as well has got.
Yeah, Wall-E's got. Yeah, big time. Wall-E's probably my second or third favorite.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Again, just the sci-fi elements and all.
Virtually the first half hour is a silent film. Isn't it? Which is unheard of.
It's a proper throwback to like the cinema of yesteryear.
And he watches the silent film, doesn't he? Well, it's not a silent film, but the old film.
What's it called now?
I feel like
it's in my notes.
What's that?
Just carry on. Yeah.
What about you, Walshy? What hits you emotionally in any Pixar film? Obviously,
they're all,
I'm guessing, Monsters Inc.
but not the same. Obviously, they've all got their own emotional element, but for me, like, where I physically cried was The Good Dinosaur.
I miss my family. Family. me. There's Libby. And Buck. And Mama. And...
The scene got me when he's obviously, because you've got these two characters coming together. You've got this young lad, this young boy, and then this dinosaur, right? Yeah. And they've both lost their family. So he's lost his dad. Well, his dad dies, and then he's lost his mum and his sister, I think. And then this young Neanderthal kid lost his family, and they've come together. They can't communicate with each other. They don't speak each other's language, but physically they show each other, like you know, where's your family? And then like that scene where the kid, I think he pops up like three sticks, yeah, and then he pushes down like his mum and his dad, and it's just him.
Yeah.
Like that scene is just like, yeah, literally, like it just gets you every time. You know it's coming as well, and it's like, yeah, it's horrendous because they both can't communicate with each other, but in that moment, they both know that they've lost like their family.
I feel like the good dinosaur is such a lost opportunity because there's so many great elements in it, and then it goes a bit flat story wise. Mm. It just meanders along a little bit for me personally.
Yeah,
but like you said, there's so many. The fact that it hits me emotionally, it must be good on a high level, but it could have been so much better. I mean, I remember the trailers coming out and it was like photorealistic of the water and the environment.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
I remember seeing that going, wow.
Yeah.
But I think one of the criticisms for it was these photoreal environments, but with this sort of cartoony dinosaurs. Personally, I thought that worked really well. What didn't work for me was the story, but what many critics were criticising, I loved. The look of it, I thought was brilliant. There's a lot of good things. I think it got a little bit too much hate for what it did get. But yeah, could have been better. I don't know about you, Wilge.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree, Merton. That emotion's there, and you know, they're both on their own journey. That, you know, they found each other, but they're both still on their own journey to find their own family, and that bit resonates. And yeah, I think probably towards the end, when they're probably getting towards the end of that journey where they are looking to find their family, I think it probably teeters off a little bit. Yeah. But again, I guess it's very in Pixar's sort of form, you know, in the way of it's kind of like a buddy movie. You know, these two people find each other, and you know, they pal up to, you know, get to their end goal, which is to find their own family. And you know, you have the emotional roller coasters, you know, from the start of the film. I mean, the kid's dad's really the dinosaur's dad's really like hard on him because he's a little puny thing compared to like his older brother. But yeah, I think, yeah, probably you wouldn't be wrong in saying it. I think it teeters off a little bit, but yeah, I still enjoy the film. Like, I've watched it a few times, and you know, it still hits me.
Yeah.
From that emotional aspect, but yeah, I wouldn't write it off. It's not like I said, it's a good film. It's not the worst film by any stretch of the imagination.
But going back to the bit you were saying about, you know, early on in it where they can't like understand each other's language and communicate properly with each other.
Yeah.
Again, Pixar being Pixar, they're not. It's clearly probably angled in a way of like, no matter what, you know, we're all kind of in it together. We're all the same type, you know, regardless of where we're from. Culture we're from, our background, be kind to each other. And I kind of like how like emotion is like a universal language. You can kind of, even if you don't like literally understand them, you can kind of figure out what someone's going through to a point. And,
yeah.
So again, it's just they're so good.
Good storytelling.
A bit about Wall-E. I guess by background, I love sci-fi, you know, like your Blade Runners and stuff. And there's a lot of stuff in there about that. You know, it questions what it is to be human. And yeah, again, it's just a lot of deep emotional themes in that film. There's a lot.
The opening, the opening sequences of that film as well, and it's because you're exploring like humanity's left Earth, right?
Yeah.
So we've created this environment where it's no longer sustainable, but there's then still this robot carrying out its everyday tasks that it's been programmed to do, and even though there's nobody there for it to do the work for, it's still doing that mundane task day in and day out, crushing down, you know, the metal and putting it into blocks, and he's created this whole landscape of himself because he's been there for that long doing it. And yeah, it touches upon that, you know, machines being left to do what they've been programmed to do regardless of, you know, if there's actually human contact there or not. It's similar to that that Russian short that I sent you on Instagram network,
where it just keeps doing its thing.
Continues to do what it's programmed to do, even though there's nobody there that it's doing it for. And yeah, it touches on a lot of social things.
So again with Wall-E as well, I feel like there's obviously the character Wall-E has like a real like admiration for like the old fashioned things, you know, everything he finds and stuff like that. And I feel like how connected he is to that and how emotion or the emotion it conveys in Wally himself and as I was watching it. And then you contrast that with like how ridiculous the humans are, and it kind of says something about, you know, it's necessary.
It's a warning, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a warning, and it's necessary to look back before you move forward, that kind of thing. It's
deep messages.
There is, yeah.
Is Wally more human than the humans?
Yeah, exactly. And again, that kind of falls into the whole Blade Runner thing, doesn't it? What does it mean to be human? Completely. Wally's got a lot more emotion than any of the humans in that film, I think. I've not seen it in a long time, but yeah, that's pretty much summed it up for how I felt about it. And yeah, again, it's just a film that asks deep questions, and you know, that's what they're great at doing, and I hope they continue to do that going forward.
Yeah, because you're introducing that to a younger audience.
It's all the messages in it are super important, especially for kids growing up. And also for adults, you know, people lose their way going forward. And, you know, like, look at everyone's obsessed with, like, the Instagram and, like, instant gratification and stuff. And, you know, we were fine without that. And, again, to go back to that with Wally, it's like sometimes, you know, look back before you move forward. And, there's just so much in it. When you could spend hours talking about it.
It's just about what's coming now, what's next, obviously. We're well into this Disney era, right, of all of Pixar.
So coming up for Pixar is mainly sequels, isn't it? We've got Elio this year, which is an original, which the trailer's out, which I think looks really fun. I think Incredibles 3 is scheduled in the next year or so, as we know, Toy Story 5. And there's another one.
Finding Nemo.
Hoppers or something like that.
But rabbits.
I think it's called Hoppers, something like that. Finding Nemo, did you say?
Yeah, there is.
I think so.
Yeah, I feel right, like there is one in the pipeline, I think. Again.
It was Pixar, that, right?
Yeah.
I think number 3 is in the works.
Okay, then.
Another dad. Story, son and dad.
Yeah, another one, yeah.
I guess there's a fair amount of sequels coming, which is, I think, we're all a bit apprehensive about a little bit. So what would you guys like to see from Pixar in the future? I know for me personally, I would just like them to really keep the script and the story and the characters at its core, enduring stuff, I guess. At the core, characters, story over anything. How does streaming affect Pixar now? Are we going to get kind of like a film and then a spin-off TV series? Because I know, is there the Monsters University thing on there, which apparently is pretty good.
Yeah, they did
a TV series on that.
Didn't watch it.
But I know that, like, was it Soul and Luca? I think they didn't even get a cinema release.
That's right.
During COVID, though, wasn't there? I think Soul. I don't know if they're talking about it, but I think they're on about bringing Soul for a short theatrical release. Which it deserved, to be fair.
I think
it deserved it.
They do
COVID films.
Because they were great Pixar films, to be fair.
So we'll see. I think this Disney year, it's just about, you know, I understand the necessity of making like sequels and trilogies because, you know, they want to keep the franchise going, and it's probably easy to make money that way. But, you know, they need to continue with those original stories and keeping that great storytelling.
Needs to be a nice mix of them both, doesn't it? It's kind of like, we totally get it. I mean, I feel like Pixar, for the most part, the sequels, they will be pretty solid. I think the standard will be pretty high compared to some of the other studios. But they totally get the Toy Story 5 will probably pay for the next 3 original
animated films. If that's what we need to find the balance between them making enough revenue to pay for the original stories, then so be it, as long as they keep putting them out as well as the franchises.
As long as the sequels are quality.
I mean, it's like we grew up with Woody and Buzz, and I loved it and I still do. So, you know, keep it going for future generations to also grow up with them, and, you know, so there's that element to it as well. I guess to kind of wrap it up a little bit, Pixar has given us, like, what, 30 years of just absolute brilliance and some of the most...
Rollercoaster of emotions.
Yeah, some of the most emotional films I've watched, to be fair. You know, I've probably cried over more Pixar films than I have, like, normal films. No, I don't know, actually, because I do cry a lot at films. I'm a film baby.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, I'm just, I like being emotional. And that includes when I'm watching some bloody straight to Netflix film and 30 minutes in, I'm like, this is fucking shit. I get very emotional at that kind of thing. But yeah, very grateful to have grown up in the era where Pixar was born. I feel very lucky definitely. And privileged to like grow up with these characters and stuff.
Yeah, we are lucky.
Yeah. Good on you, Steve Jobs.
Did something right.
Yeah, I guess
that's that. Goodbye, everybody.
Sorry it's been so long if anybody's listening.
Yeah, we'll make sure the next one comes out quicker.
Yeah, and we'll, I promise we'll, I'll personally work on structure because I feel like I've just hopped from film to film. And then
oh, I think we definitely stuff. Have this. Like, it's been like 6 weeks.
Yeah, now. we need to get back in the groove of it. But yeah, I guess that's that.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening.
See you on the next one.
Bye bye.